With identity theft and fraud a growing national problem, the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace is getting closer to possible solutions. The project at the National Institute for Standards and Technology is aimed at coming up with better ways of knowing who exactly is online. For an update, I spoke with Acting NSTIC Director Mike Garcia. He said the program, under which grants fund pilot technology projects, has been active.
So far, we've awarded 18 pilots over the past 4 years, and we're really starting to see some traction with these pilots. You know, we've over the course of the evolution of what we're trying to do, and you know, these 4 years of awarding pilots, you know, we've focused on first these kind of very broad approaches. We have these huge challenges trying to develop this identity ecosystem. And in order to make progress, we really need to address these things on this kind of very large ecosystem-wide scale. We've really seen some traction there. And one of the things we've seen in the marketplace, you know, some of it's direct from our pilots, some of it's indirect, some of it's probably totally unrelated to anything that we're doing, is movement towards increased use of multi-factor authentication, a variety of different types of authentication solutions that are out there that are stronger than simply using usernames and passwords. We've seen a growth in different types of identity proofing technologies. And, you know, one of the things that it's a bit of an intangible, but there's really this increased understanding with how we have awareness in the marketplace, not just for consumers about this and about it, be it identity theft or just generally how to interact online and, you know, the role of privacy online and sharing their own information, but also organizations. Enterprise use of multi-factor authentication is up massively over the last handful of years. And we're starting to see a larger consumer uptake of multi-factor authentication. And a big part of this is the matter of users really understanding what it is that's happening, why it is important to protect themselves, even if it requires an extra step and a few extra seconds. One of the things that we've also seen is as consumer adoption of these incredible computers, you know, that we carry in our pockets that have biometric sensors on them, have high-resolution cameras on them, that we have much better ways of capturing this notion, is this the correct person that's authenticating, and making it easier at the same time. And so while the first round of pilots, we really were just this very broad, tell us a way that you can make this problem better, what we're starting to do now is kind of take this evolutionary perspective and look more carefully at where the market has grown for better authentication solutions and identity solutions, and where it hasn't. What are the impediments of the market that either have been persistent or are now emerging as the market evolves?
Because what I wanted to ask you about, one of the emerging areas seems to be the use of, especially this is affecting federal agencies, and that is the use of the Social Security number to create accounts and get refunds or get federal food stamp benefits, whatever the case might be, where the central piece of ID is still the person's name and Social Security number. Can what the NSTIC is doing help prevent this kind of thing, which is a very different problem from, say, you know, stealing a computer and guessing someone's password?
That's right. That's absolutely right. So, you know, you're really focusing on the identity piece of it. And we actually try to split that work on the identity proofing piece of it into separate parts as well, smaller subsections. So if I want to use my name and my Social Security number, as a guy named Mike Garcia, using my name to resolve to that unique person that I'm trying to, you know, get to, it's not very easy. I need to give some other sort of information to get to that unique person, the one Mike Garcia that I'm talking about.
You know, there's probably 25,000 of them in the eastern United States.
You have no idea. I've never worked anywhere there wasn't another Mike Garcia. The first step in that identity proofing process is getting to that unique person in the database, in the system, whatever it is. And it's okay to use things like Social Security number to do that. It's a pretty good unique identifier. What it's not is a secret. It's not a good authenticator. So simply knowing Mike Garcia's Social Security number does no good in proving that you're actually talking on the phone to Mike Garcia. So you have to use other means. You can use a Social Security number to get that person unique, find the person's entry, but you do not want to use it to prove that that's who they act, that you're actually talking to that person or that you're interacting with that person on the other side of the screen. So you mentioned state benefits programs. We actually, one of our pilots is with the state of Michigan, and that pilot is just about to wrap up now. And we had one of the nice things we did with that pilot, because it was a state program, we did an independent evaluation with it also. And preliminary analysis, that independent evaluation, is simply by doing improved identity proofing processes online. Rather than forcing people to come in and have their and do their identity proofing, they have the option. They can do whichever one they want. We actually were able to reduce the amount of time that it takes by about 8% in the backlog of the food assistance program in the state of Michigan. And so, you know, 8% doesn't sound like a lot, But the impact is about equivalent to a one-day reduction in the amount of time between when an applicant submits their application and when it's processed, which means a one-day reduction before they actually start getting benefits.
And what is the mechanism by which you were able to do that? What was the mechanism for authenticating that that person really was who they were, proving who that person says they were?
Yeah, so in this case, what they were doing was what many people have seen, most listeners probably have seen, where you put in your general information. They use that general information to resolve to a unique person, and then they start asking you some questions about where have you lived, what kind of cars you've owned, those sorts of things to try and identify, okay, do you actually know information that generally isn't knowable, right, that isn't all that public of information? There's a risk tolerance in there, and that's one of the things we really need to consider. What type of application is it, and can we do a good enough job? Is the information that's being asked truly private? What is the likelihood that if you answer correctly, you're actually the person that you're claiming to be? And that depends on the type of application. It depends on the type of questions. It's not going to work for everyone. And so it's important that we have multiple avenues to pursue for identity proofing. But in this case, we did not see an appreciable increase in fraud. There was no increase in fraud statistically. So we were able to keep the current fraud level where it is while improving efficiency of the system. That's good. What will be even better is if we can manage to reduce fraud while improving the efficiency of the system. And so that's one of the things we're going to be looking at further.
Because one of the growing areas also where fraud is taking place is it with electronic medical records, which can actually have a life-threatening outcome if the hospital thinks you're one person and you know you're another and they prescribe something that could kill you thinking you're not who you are.
Yep.
That's an extreme example, right. But that's an area I think people are becoming more concerned of. With as the federal government itself is pushing electronic health records.
One of the things that we're focusing now on several different areas. So one of the new funding opportunities that we have closed on Thursday, and so we're now in the process of reviewing applications for that funding opportunity, and it was specifically for state and local governments and benefits programs provided by state and local governments or other government services provided by them. So, this is one of our focus areas. Another focus area that we expect to be having opportunities for in the future include healthcare and include finance and then the work that we're doing in federal government adoption. So these are key areas that we're focusing on really advancing because the threat landscape is changing. And we have so much room to gain from an efficiency standpoint that there's a lot of pressure for organizations to be doing more of these things electronically. And that's a wonderful thing. But we need to make sure that they're able to do it at least as well as they were doing it on paper or in person, if not better. And so you can reap the gains from those efficiencies without losing on having a cost of additional fraud.
And are you getting a lot of interest in these programs and grants and the work you're actually doing from the federal government as well as the state and local governments?
Yeah, we have been, and we NIST always works very closely with agencies on a whole host of different types of federal guidance in the IT space and elsewhere. Specific to identity, we've been running a pilot program now for about 2 years. The actual operational aspect of it has been about a year, working with agencies on providing a shared service so that the reality is, sure, for some of these very large agencies, it may be relatively efficient to stand up their own identity proofing and authentication platform, and many agencies have done so and have done a decent job of it. But we probably can have even greater efficiency if we do it on a shared basis. And even if the large agencies are doing it themselves and are doing just as well at it, we can provide a benefit to constituents that are coming for government services by not requiring them to create a new login at every single website that they go to. Especially if we're requiring multi-factor authentication, then we're requiring them to have a different multi-factor authentication solution at every one of those agencies as well. And then if you look at the micro-agencies, the smaller agencies, they're very hungry for these better solutions. They want to be able to do these things more efficiently, but they're simply by a matter of size of those agencies, they don't have the budget to really be investing in these solutions in the way that they need to. And so we're really looking to do this in a shared service approach. And we've had some early successes that have really shown us that there's an appetite from agencies to do this right, and two, that it can provide a real benefit to our constituents if we can provide it on a true shared service basis.
Recently, the NSTIC held a workshop called Applying Measurement Science in the Identity Ecosystem. What happened there, and what does it mean to apply measurement science in the identity ecosystem?
Great question. So this is one of the things that I've really focused on in the time that I've been acting as director is, we like to say, getting NISTy with it. So, you know, NIST is very much a standards and measurement science organization, and what we've been doing in the NSTIC has been very much applied, putting out grants, really trying to get things in the marketplace. And now that we've done some of that, and there is a growing number of varied solutions for conducting identity proofing and authentication online, one of the best things that you can do, we believe, in order to really foster that marketplace, is to do a good job of measuring those solutions and how well they're performing. So if there are 15 different solutions out there, it'd be nice to be able to make a decision as a business owner, as a federal agency, to know, will this fit? Will this perform the way I need it to? Does it mitigate risk that's commensurate with the risk of the transaction that I want to get done, that I want to provide to my customer or my constituent? And so what we're trying to do is, now we think that there's a sufficient toehold in the marketplace for these stronger authentication and identity solutions, that we can really look at them and say, how can we create a framework to measure their performance, to measure whether they're really getting the job done? It's not up to NIST to make the decision of whether a given solution is good enough or not, but to provide a consistent basis by which you can measure the performance of that solution. It's really important, and that can have a huge impact on advancing the marketplace.
It would seem to me there's at least two measurements for any one of these systems. I'll use the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services as an example because of the, whatever, $700 billion they spend every year. They admit that 15% of it is fraudulent, which means, who knows, it could be 30% for all we know. So on the one hand, for them, or an agency like that at the state or federal level, a good measurement would be, you know, how much is my fraud being reduced? And then from the constituent side or the consumer side, the answer is, how much less chance do I feel that my identity is being stolen, which could affect my life in many, many different ways? Two measurements, and each one from a different side, correct?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And, you know, it's probably a little more stratified than that even. So, you know, there is the strict kind of fraud basis. So I think the way you're describing it essentially is, how many bad guys do we let in accidentally? And then how many good guys are we accidentally keeping out because we've made the process onerous or for whatever reason it doesn't work for that individual? And so we have to consider both of those things. And those really are the primary metrics. I think you're absolutely right. But we also, you know, need to be looking at this kind of granular level of, are we also taking privacy into consideration and mitigating privacy risk in a way that makes sense and in a way that gives consumers choice or constituents choice and lets our customers know, here's how we're handling your data. Are we taking an appropriate approach to this? So then there's interoperability. Are we really looking at the way that that these solutions can interoperate between different applications so that I don't have to get a new credential or reproof every time I go to an application? Even if it's a wonderful application, I don't want to do it 40 different times in 40 different places. So, you know, there's that kind of interoperability aspect of it, the usability aspect of it. Is this something that consumers are delighted to use? Or are they willing to put up with it because it's something they have to do? Or do they understand that, in fact, it does protect them better, so they're willing to go through a little bit of pain for it? So there are a number of different vectors on which we can look at how to measure these solutions. Some of them are inherently more quantifiable than others, but they're all important, and we really need to be focusing on trying to improve identity solutions across all of those vectors.
We're speaking with Mike Garcia, Acting Director for the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace at NIST. And so I guess you've implied or almost said that complexity of the system is a big factor here, partly because of people that have to administer the systems, but also partly with people that have to interact with them. And let's face it, online systems can be complicated enough, and you got to go carefully before you add complication to it, no matter how good the motive might be.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. And, you know, part of what we see of solutions that are successful on the internet and totally independent of whether they're talking about identity or anything else is elegance. There has to be some level of elegance that users have to want to use it and come back and use it again. And that is it's a huge component of it. And so if you make something too complex, you know, we talk about privacy policies that are 50 pages long, and they may be perfectly well written in that they communicate everything they're supposed to communicate. But you could make a pretty strong argument that many of those are unusable. And so are they really serving their purpose? Are they really communicating to the user what the user needs to know and care about how their information is being treated? And so, you know, I think that's this notion of keeping it as simple as possible while effectively accomplishing what it needs to accomplish and communicating and conveying the information that needs to be conveyed is it's absolutely essential to anything that's going to be accepted in the marketplace.
I wanted to ask you about the Privacy Risk Management for Federal Information Systems Framework, something that you were working on earlier. How did that come out, and what's the status of it?
Sure. So we had a draft document that was out in the summer. We got a great deal of comment from it, and really terrific and helpful set of comments that we've gone through at this point, and we're now updating that document. One of the things that we're going to be doing when we release it is one of the things we heard a lot from our stakeholders was, where is this going overall? What is NIST plan overall? And so one of the things that we're going to be doing is taking a little more time to carefully spell out what our plans are for this risk management approach to privacy and really looking at privacy as an engineering discipline. And so that's we're working right now on kind of making that really careful exposition of this is what we're thinking. This is kind of the way that we want to think about this from an engineering perspective. And here's our roadmap for getting it done. So we were very pleased with the comments that we got back. We have a lot of confidence that this is the right direction to go, and we want to make sure that we do a careful job of communicating that. And so we expect that the final version of that document will be out sometime in the summer, and then that, along with that will be a roadmap of where we plan to go with the privacy engineering domain.
And there's really no endpoint, I guess, to the work the NSTIC is doing until some nirvana day when everyone feels like they can be online safely and all identities are protected. But that doesn't seem like it's going to happen anytime in the next few months.
Probably not few months. You know, the NSTIC had 3 to 5 year benchmarks. We are coming up in April on the 5th NSTIC-versary, as I like to call it. And then there were also long-term benchmarks of 7 to 10 years. And so we are pretty much right on those 5-year benchmarks. We're very proud of that. We've been making the progress that we've wanted to make. You know, of course, there are many hiccups along the road, but that's part of doing, trying to fulfill a difficult task. What we expect is that as part of this kind of evolution from this very broad challenge-based approach for the pilots, we're going to get very focused on those things that are market impediments. And we do expect that there'll be brand new market impediments we never thought about that show up. You know, when that 10-year benchmark hits, we really don't know what kinds of technologies we'll be using. The world could change again, and some amazing product could completely shift the way that we interact with each other digitally. And we have to create the expectation that everything we do will be different. And so the goal here really is to establish standards that allow good solutions to emerge completely unthought of before, and take a foothold in the marketplace, and bad solutions to go away. And one of the things that was really fundamental kind of in the philosophy of the NSTIC was that it's not that passwords are inherently bad in of themselves, it's that they're outdated. But the way that we created the system, it's very hard to get rid of them. Whatever would replace passwords or supplement passwords or get us to this nirvana point, at least for some short point in time until it's no longer the nirvana point, we have to assume that that's also going to break. It's just the nature of technology. And so what we're trying to build really is an ability to be evolutionary and not just to find the perfect widget to plug in that will be, again, outdated in 5 years.
Mike Garcia is Acting Director of the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace. Share both parts of this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click Share with Friends.